Thank you for listening to the Ablaze Church Sermon Podcast. Our purpose at Ablaze is to love God, love others, follow Jesus, and tell others. If you are looking for a church home in the Tulsa area, we'd love to have you join us for worship on Saturdays at 6:30 p.m. or Sundays at 10:30 a.m. For more information, please visit our website at ablazechurch.org.
There was something that I did to my parents and my kids did to me that my grandkids didn't do to their parents. You say, what in the world was that? Well, okay, when you're starting off on a road trip, what after about 5 minutes, what do the kids tend to say? Yeah, I said that to my parents. Our kids said it to us. My grandkids didn't say it to their parents. A simple reason why. Because as soon as they got strapped into the SUV, there was a little screen that came down and entertained them for hours. And when that got to be, a little less, that's the real thing, that's the cool thing right now, they had their own devices that they could do more than just watch, be captives of what was on that screen. They had the whole world right there on that little screen on their lap, and that would keep them going for hours. Occasionally they'd fall asleep, they'd wake up again, are we almost there? No, they didn't say that, because they wanted to be doing what they were doing. Those things are very addicting. So a journey of 1,000 miles begins how? With what? Yeah, with that one step, that first step. So the children of Israel, the people of Israel, had a question because they've been promised, you'll be going to a promised land. Oh, okay, that's cool. We're looking forward to that. And as we kind of look at it from a new perspective, from the New Testament, we see, there is a journey also that began on Palm Sunday, which ended up at a cross. But that journey didn't end there. When it appeared that it was all ending, it began again and anew at an empty tomb, and we're on that journey to a promised land as well. But the question comes up, what's taking so long? Why did it take them so long? When do we finally get into that promised land? I'm sure they're asking that question, and they're getting a little bit antsy, a little bit disturbed. That land, we've been in Egypt, which is a land of darkness, a land of slavery, and you promised us a promised land, so what's taking us so long? That land of light. Now, last week, we left you at Mount Sinai and that whole motley crew of these Israelites, 10 commandments, but there were another 603 commandments, detailed regulations about how you run your government, how you run your society, how you do all of your ceremonial things and your worship and all of that, and how the tabernacle is to be built and the function that it's supposed to have. But also in that time, there was the shame of what that golden calf. But let's review how all this takes place, because as said when we introduced the service this morning, we have been on a venture going through the Bible. We started with creation, followed by the story of the account of what we call the fall of humankind, the fall. And then came, after a period of time, the flood, because the evil had to be destroyed. But with that flood, there was also some grace so that God could renew the earth again and Noah and his family were saved. And then came that the Tower of Babel, and with that, the dispersing of the nations throughout all of the world, and then the confusion of languages. But in the midst of that, I'm poking up to the sky because Abraham is given a promise by God. His descendants would be as numerous as the stars. God made a covenant with him, which he then passes on to his descendant, Isaac. And from Isaac then to Jacob, the guy who had these 12 sons, one of whom was named Joseph, had that coat of many colors. That's why I'm doing this. And he ends up, again, making that long story short, down in Egypt. But he is second in command of that whole country of Egypt. And in time, all 70 of the members of his family end up in Egypt. But after a period of time, 300 years, there's bondage. They become slaves. So God has a plan. He calls a guy by the name of Moses. Moses was a shepherd. That's the shepherd's staff. Moses. And he says, go to Pharaoh and say, let my people go, Pharaoh says, no. And now God sends the 10 plagues. And in those 10 plagues, it's 10 rounds in this battle. It's a do or die battle between God and 10 Egyptian gods and goddesses. Guess who wins every round? Yeah, God does. He wins every round. Yahweh, the one only true God. And finally, Pharaoh says, okay, go. But he changes his mind after they leave and he pursues them. And all of a sudden, here are these happy Israelites set free. But all of a sudden, there's on one side, there's the sea. And the other side, there are the soldiers of the Pharaoh. What are they going to do? Well, Moses does what God tells him, takes that step. He shakes a stick at the Red Sea and it parts and they cross like it's a freeway. Crossover, and as soon as they're over and the forces of Egypt are in the middle of that highway, whoop, the waters come down again and they are drowned. So they are so happy. They said, hey, we will never distrust God again. You can count on us. We are true, true blue believers until the next problem comes along. Now, they eventually get to Mount Sinai. And at Mount Sinai, that's where we get the Ten Commandments and a whole lot of other ceremonial laws about offerings and feasts and Levites and priests and anything else you can rhyme with that. And then they're going to be on the move because they build that tabernacle. And when the smoke that is and that cloud that is over the tabernacle moves, they're supposed to move. They go all the way up to Kadesh Barnea, which is practically on the border of what will be the Holy Land. And they're just about ready to go in. But something has happened along the way, and that is, you know, the golden calf, and they began worshiping other gods. And that's one of those speed bumps along the way. So we've got speed bumps along the way that keep them from actually getting there. They're stuck now in the desert. Migration is stalled and stranded at Kadesh Barnea. And a four-day trip up to the border and to take that land is going to take how long? 40 years. So I asked my wife, who knows just about everything about the Bible, and her name is Connie, which is short for concordance. Okay. And she knows it all. And so I asked her, why did it take so long? And she said, well, figure it out. Moses was a male, and you guys never stop and ask for directions. No wonder. No wonder they got lost. Well, actually, the speed bumps were character flaws. Character flaws. And you know, when you run into a difficult time, that is when it seems all your character flaws get revealed and sometimes even magnified. Oh man, I hate that. It is really, really embarrassing. And sometimes I get upset, not because I have sinned against God, but I'm afraid I'm going to be embarrassed. You know, my weaknesses show up. But God has a mission for these people, and he's got to deal with these issues of these people of Israel. The mission for them is to show the rest of the world who God is. In other words, you are to be a light to the nations. Shine, whether it's 2019 or whatever year it is. You know, hey, folks, your job is simply shine. Let the rest of the world know. So what do? They spend their time in griping. In grumbling, in complaining. Oh, weren't there enough graves there in Egypt? Yeah, we should have died there. Why are you bringing us out here to die in the middle of this terrible, loathsome wilderness and the food is awful, etc.? You know, we should be treated better than what we are being treated. You know, they even complained about the manna, which is a supernatural provision of food. You didn't have to go to the grocery store. You didn't have to make a list. Can you just imagine? You just walked outside, and you picked it up and put it in the basket. And there it was. Huh, what are we having tonight for dinner, honey? Oh, manna. And it began to complain, manna, all the time. Why not some banana manna or something like that? Same old thing all the time, complaining about it. And as a matter of fact, it showed that character flaw and the nature of sin so fully that God said, take a chunk of that manna, stick it inside of a jar, put it in the Ark of the Covenant, because the Ark of the Covenant is going to contain some symbols of your sinful rebelliousness. Ooh, something we got to be dealing with. So by this time, how many of the Ten Commandments had the people of Israel broken? Only 10. Well, actually, why'd they break 10 commandments? Because there weren't 14 or 15. They'd have broken those too. Okay, so they break all the commandments of God. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? In that experience, they have highs and lows as they're going along. You know, you think of the high points. Hey, we'll always trust God now. Oh, he took us out of Egypt. He spared us and our firstborn with the blood of that lamb. He took us across the Red Sea. He sent us manna every day. Wow, high points. We met God at Mount Sinai, and boy, could we feel it in the rumbling of those earthquakes and the lightning that came down. So, wow. Hey, God is real, isn't he? You can't deny that. And then, but it's going to take some time because, you know, they went to that golden calf before you knew it. 10 plagues, and a few days to get people out of Egypt. And now it's going to take 40 years to get Egypt out of Israel because, you see, it's a state of mind. Then when they get to that Kadesh Barnea, they send 12 spies. You know that song you learned back in VBS when you were kids. You know, about 12 spies that went to Canaan. Spy out the land. What is it like there? Well, they came back with a report and was 10 of them were bad and only 2 were good, Joshua and Caleb. But they brought, the majority report was so negative. No way. We are, you know, no can do this. It's just not possible. The 2 good ones said, hey, God said we could have it. Now let's just go and take it because it's ours, isn't it? I mean, would God ever lie to us? Oh, too big a chance to take. And so they say, let's not do that. They look at the giants. You know, they had giants in the land. And when you're looking straight up at a giant, what do you see? You don't see their eyes. You see their belt buckles. That's it. So they're not going to do that. They're not going to go. They wander 40 years and then they die. All those who were at the age, you know, military age and above, they all died except Joshua and Caleb before they could come into the promised land. Yet, okay, this is a nevertheless. This is a little pivoting point here. Yet they are God's chosen people. After all of that, God still loves them. And this is what Moses told them. It says in Deuteronomy 7, starting at verse 6, for you are a people holy to the Lord. That means you're special, you're set apart, holy to me. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his treasured possession. Treasured possession out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. Whoa. We must be special to God. Well, maybe it's because we are so good. No, it was not because you were more in number than any other people that the Lord set his love on you and chose you, for you were the fewest of all people. But it was because, here's the secret. This is really the whole secret of the Christian life, isn't it? Of the Christian faith. Because the Lord loves you. And he is keeping the oath that he swore to your fathers that the Lord has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery and from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So, now what? Though they are out of Egypt, it's really hard to get Egypt out of them. They are still kind of wandering around in that land of darkness. Here's a question for you. Will God keep his promises when people don't keep theirs? What's the answer? I see some heads going, yeah, and that's right. God does. But at the same time, there's a warning. Don't mess with God. Don't trifle with God. Don't tempt him. Don't test him. Don't presume upon his grace. It's like once the Apostle Paul wrote, well, if there is so much, if sin makes grace abound, let's sin some more so that grace may abound more. You know, I like to sin and God likes to forgive. Hey, that's not possible. You got the whole thing wrong. You haven't really realized what grace is if that's what you're thinking. Now, at the end of the 40 years, the old ones have died off, their bones, bleached bones there in the desert. And God said, okay, time to go. Make the move. So they're on the move again, and Moses is giving his final speech. And one of the things he says is, I'm appointing God is appointing a new commander. His name is going to be Joshua. You know who Joshua is. Yeah, he's been around. You know, he's been my servant. You think that, just got a low position, but he's been watching everything, and he's going to know what to do. So he's appointed. Deuteronomy 18, this is what it says. The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your brothers. It is to him you shall listen. Now, there's a little secret embedded in this, and I'm going to tell you right now, in a moment, we're going to see that it's really Jesus is what it's about. But let's just pick up the story a little bit now. They're on the bank of the Jordan River. They cross over the Jordan. How do they do that? Well, God says, we're going to take the Ark of the Covenant first. And the priests, you're going to have to carry the Ark of the Covenant. You know what? The Jordan River is at flood stage. This is the highest that it ever gets. And it's really deep and the current is really fast. You know what? That could be a pretty dangerous thing. And I imagine this is one of the occupational hazards of being a priest. But that's the way God intends it to be. He wants them to be the meanest, toughest dudes that are in the whole company of Israel. They're going to be the ones that have to go first in all the battles. And so, okay, you know what? The people of God are not going to do what the priests are not going to do or will refuse to do. So they set their feet in the water. It hasn't stopped yet. You know it's going to stop. But when they do, that is when the water stops. It piles up, and they all go across. They're on the other side now, the whole lot of them, the whole camp of Israel. And God says, okay, stop now. Set up your camp. And I got some good news and some bad news. The good news is we're going to renew the covenant that was made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Oh. The bad news, it is going to be with circumcision. Okay. So, they're pretty sore about that for a few days, but they're waiting, and they're vulnerable for that period of time, but then they're on the march again. We're going to pick that up next week. So they crossed over the Jordan River. The covenant is being ratified, and now there's going to be a journey to take possession of that land. Now, we have to move forward to the new Joshua. And this is a journey through the darkness now into light. We're talking about, that land of light. But it's more than that physical Israel. The real land of light. Well, let's talk about what that might be. Well, we have to mention this Joshua because there is a second Joshua that is going to be coming. You see, this Joshua, the commander, is going to lead the people into the promises of God. But do you know what the English form, actually Joshua, is really Hebraic. That's Hebrew. You know how you would say that just strictly in English? Jesus. Same name. It's just two different language renderings of that very same name, which means simply Yahweh is salvation. That's why, the angel said, you'll call his name Jesus because he will save his people from their sins. Yahweh is salvation. Now, Joshua, the commander, prefigured that. He is a type in his anticipation of what is ultimately going to come. And so he leads them now into this land of promise, the land filled of milk and honey, the land of rest. But if you want the real rest, you don't get it from Joshua. You don't get it from a physical place. A trip to the Holy Land is a good thing, yeah. But you're not going to get it there. You're going to get it in Jesus. That is the land of rest that he gives to us. Now, there is a journey, say, through the darkness. That's what this part is about, through the darkness, because what's that darkness? It is a journey to a cross. That's the whole Palm Sunday thing. There's a journey from Bethany to Bethphage, Mount of Olives, down through that Kidron Valley, coming on up into Jerusalem. Okay, that was just a short journey, a couple miles to go, but there were many miles yet to go. And by the end of this week, that parade of palms becomes a painful parade as Jesus is bearing a cross. Jesus has a crown of thorns. He is bleeding in many places. He has been beaten. The flesh of his back has been torn badly, some places even the bones exposed, going up to Golgotha, that slight rise of land there in order to be crucified. And when he is crucified there, what happens is that he says at the final end, "It is finished," which literally means the debt has been paid in full. What's the debt? You know what? We amass a bunch of debts in our lives. Sin is like an indebtedness. That's what sin is. So who's going to pay? I can't pay. I don't have enough to pay. If I did everything, if I just totally gave myself away and died for it, if I were martyred for it, I could not even pay one fraction of what my sin deserves. It takes a Savior. It takes someone who would love me even better than I love myself. It was someone that I could trust even more than I could trust myself. And there's only one Joshua who will lead me into that land of rest, and that is Jesus. He took the price of my complaining, my rebellion, my whining, my saying, "Oh, how come you're treating me that way?" And way back, even in the Old Testament, it said, without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sins. And Jesus did it. He's that Joshua who will lead us. And so we now take, Roman numeral 3, our own journey with Jesus. Now, you got those notes handy. You have a pencil or pen handy. Just Roman numeral 3, circle the words, our own journey with Jesus. Now, we're going to, you'll see why. Now, this is journey now out of the darkness, from the kingdom of darkness, the land of slavery and bondage, to the land of light, all because of Jesus and coming into that land of rest. And I'm going to read from Colossians 2. Keep your pen or pencil handy. He has delivered us, okay, circle that, from the domain of the dark of darkness and transferred, next word is us, okay, circle that, to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom, next word, we, circle that, have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. Now, do you think God is addressing anybody personally? You get the picture. You get what it's about. This whole thing has to do with the people who are sitting right here in this place right now. You see, that's what Palm Sunday, Holy Week, the time in that upper room in the Last Supper, the time of his arrest, the time of his trial before the Sanhedrin, the trial before Pilate, the whipping, the beating, the crown of thorns, the scarlet robe, that reed in his hands, that Via Dolorosa, painful path up to Golgotha, the nails being pounded in him, the taunting and the blasphemy of those people laughing at him. And then he dies. He died for us. His journey into that darkness is our journey out of the dark. You see, this is the core of our faith. Jesus Christ died for us while we were still sinners. Jesus Christ died for us. Now, along the way, we've probably experienced our own complaining. Sometimes we've tested God. Sometimes we've pushed his grace, what would seem to be, to the limit. Only thing is, there is no limit on grace. And we have presumed upon it, which is not nice because that's testing God. We have sometimes feared the giants of our problems because, you know, when we look at our giants, what are you seeing? You're seeing just the belt buckle, you know. But Jesus took on the giant. Jesus defeated the giant. And with whom does he share his victory? See, this is what it's about. We become the recipients, the partakers of all of this. And so maybe we get ourselves, you feel like you're stuck in a spiritual desert someplace. There's frustration. And for every step you take forward, you feel like you've taken two steps backward. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm stuck. Speed bumps all over the place, all over the place. Well, Jesus just simply calls us to rest in him. So you know what? Stop the struggling. Let go. Let God. You see, if we're working at trying to work up to being acceptable to God, even acceptable to ourselves, you say, well, maybe I'm acceptable to God, but I'm not really acceptable to me. Like, I've got a higher standard than God has. Come on, give me a break. We sometimes get stuck in that place. Jesus says, okay, you can be unstuck. Just rest in me. Let go of all that trying, because it's already been done. It's already been taken forward. Come forward with me into the land of the light. That journey into the light. Come to me, all who are weary, heavy laden. I will give you rest. I will give you rest for your souls. The journey into Jerusalem was all about that. And now he invites us into that journey, into the light. Yeah, next week we're going to be expressing and celebrating, rejoicing in what the outcome is when that tomb is empty. You know, we're going to do this little thing, you know, when people on Easter, can't say it today, you know, like the pastor says, Christ is risen, you know, and then you say, you shout it out, he is risen indeed. Okay, we're gonna do that. Not now. We're going to save that. We'll experience the darkness of this grave during this time of Holy Week. And I would just urge upon you, in addition to, you know, coming to the cross-training things, to do this. Spend time reading through the story of the crucifixion of Jesus, the trial and the crucifixion. Be there with him in that event and see what it is that he has done. See how far the love of Jesus would go for us. And then he brings us into that promised land. And in that promised land, what do we have? We have release from guilt. You are no longer counted guilty by God. It is a free gift. It is a land of grace. Yeah, milk and honey. It's love and peace. What a beautiful place it is. You know what? You don't have to wait until you die to get there. You know that it's yours. It's yours today. It's meant for now. Now, to be reigning with Christ, to be seated in the heavenlies with him. It says seated in the heavenlies. That means you're not out there working, trying to make yourself acceptable to God or to yourself or to anybody else. You are accepted by God just as you are. And he loves you enough, he's not going to just leave you there either. Now, finally, the ultimate land of light. That's, you know, finally when we go to be with Jesus, that heavenly country, that land of rest. For us, well, claim it because it's offered to you. What do I have to pay for it? It's free, already paid for, already bought and paid for. It's yours. So faith just simply embraces it.